Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read the inside pages of the Odessa American, published Tuesday, April 11th, 2023. Enrollment celebration set. The 8082 enrollment celebration, Odessa College, celebrates another record. Spring enrollment numbers usually lag behind fall enrollment numbers by approximately 10%, but that isn't the story this spring. OC reports a record spring enrollment of 8,082, a 5% increase over the 2022 spring semester, and more students than in the fall 2022 semester, a release said. All OC, staff, board members, and stakeholders are invited to join the celebration at 1:30 p.m. today, April 11th, in the amphitheater in the Commons area behind the Salisbury Campus Center. OC has continued to increase its enrollment each year for the past 10 years, while most colleges and universities have seen decreases in enrollment as a result of the economy and the pandemic and other factors. The National Student Clearinghouse Research Center released in May 2022 that about 662,000 fewer undergraduates enrolled in college in spring 2022 than the year before, the release said. The losses represented a 4.7% decline in undergrad students and occurred across all institution types tracked, including public universities, private institutions, and community colleges. A stark difference from Odessa College's experience. Falcon Giving Day. UT Permian Basin's annual Falcon Giving Day is this Wednesday. Falcon Giving Day is a 24-hour online campaign which aims to inspire Falcons and the community to come together, show pride for UTPB, and provide essential funding to support current and future students. Every donation, no matter how big or small, makes an impact. All you have to do is visit utpb.edu/giving day to give a gift of any size. Board to undergo team building. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will participate in annual team building training at 5 p.m. Tuesday in the third floor conference room of the Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. The training will be run by the Center for the Reform of School Systems, CRSS. The agency said it also includes opening and closing remarks by Superintendent Scott Murray and a possible executive session. Two earthquakes rattle near Stanton. Two earthquakes happened about 3 hours apart early Monday morning northwest of Stanton. According to the United States Geological Survey, the earthquakes were measured at 3.8 and 2.7 magnitudes. The first earthquake, 3.8, happened around 1:14 a.m., about 12 miles northwest of Stanton. The second earthquake, 2.7, occurred at 4:43 a.m., about 9 miles northwest of Stanton. The USGS details another earthquake that was recorded about 9 miles southeast of Stanton on April 7th. The earthquake happened at around 12:24 a.m. and recorded at 2.8 magnitude. Local news roundup. Odessan accused in ag assault. A 23-year-old man was arrested last week after his girlfriend told authorities he pointed a gun at her and at her head during a fit of jealousy. According to an Odessa Police Department report released Monday, the 24-year-old woman called police on March 20th and told them Isaiah Malachi Diaz grabbed her phone while they were in a car together and discovered messages from another man. She said he became upset, pulled over into the parking lot of the Holiday Inn on East 42nd Street, and forced her to call the other man at gunpoint. The woman told police she asked the other man to come visit her on West Bradley Drive, and after locking herself in the bathroom, she heard him arrive, the report stated. She then heard three gunshots and saw the other man leaving. The other man advised the officers he saw Diaz standing outside the home with a gun, and as he was leaving, he heard gunshots, the report stated. Officers confirmed there were texts and phone calls on the day in question and saw injuries on the woman, according to the report. When officers contacted Diaz on March 27th, he denied everything, but they obtained a warrant for his arrest on an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon charge, and he was arrested Wednesday. He was released Thursday after posting a $5,000 surety bond. Fire contained to pit area. According to the city of Odessa's Facebook page, a pit of trash caught fire behind La Cresta Avenue near one of the golf course equipment warehouses Sunday night. No structures were damaged and no one was injured. Hello, this is Michael. Due to an error, the obituaries in Saturday, April 8th's Midland Reporter-Telegram were not read. We're going to bring those to you today. Bobby H. Latner. On Palm Sunday, April 2nd, Bobby H. Latner quietly passed away at her home in Midland, Texas. Bobby was born April 27th, 1926 in Sweetwater, Texas, to Jesse and Honor Hallard. Bobby married Buford Chesney on September 20th, 1945. They were married 18 years before his passing in 1964. Bobby married Travis Latner in 1966. Bobby was preceded in death by her parents, Jesse and Honor Hallard. Husbands, Buford Chesney and Travis Latner. Twin sister, Billy Nichols. Brothers, Curtis and Pete, and grandson, John Steinmetz. She survived by her daughters, Linda Myers, Carol Steinmetz, Terry Moore, and husband, Harden, and sons, Tip Chesney and Bill Latner, and wife, Wendy, plus grandchildren and great-grandchildren. There will be a graveside service Tuesday, April 11th at 2 p.m. at Mount Evergreen Cemetery in Pecos. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be donated to Hospice of Midland or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Eric Anthony Lopez. Eric Anthony Lopez of Rankin passed away suddenly on April 1st after a lengthy health battle. He was born September 19, 1987 to Gilbert Lopez and Patsy Pruitt in San Angelo, Texas. He is survived by his son, Gavin Eli, his best friend, Gabby, his daughters, Ariana and Hervé, and husband, Sam, and father, Gilbert Lopez Jr. and wife, Jessica, his dad, Junior Armendariz, and wife, Danielle. Siblings, Jamie Lopez, Stephen Lopez, and Armando Armendariz III and wife Carolina, plus nieces and grandchildren. Celebration of Life will be held April 15th at 2 p.m. at the Rankin Park Building in Rankin, with a reception to follow for family and friends. Flowers are under the arrangements of Venegas Flower Shop in McCamey, Texas. Funeral services have been entrusted to the care of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, 1502 North Lamesa Road, Midland, 79701. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Jimmy Knox Arnold. Jimmy K. Arnold, 77, of Midland, left this life April 1st. Jimmy was born to Malcolm K.P. Arnold and Avis Louise Brindley, Arnold Queen, March 5th, 1946. Jimmy is preceded in death by his father, Malcolm K.P. Arnold, his mother, Avis Louise Brindley, Arnold Queen, and his brother-in-law, Stephen Blake Carter. Those left to cherish his memory are his sister, Judy K. Carter of Midland, his brother, Johnny M. Arnold of Midland, his nephew Sean D. Carter of Midland, his niece Brandy L. Duthit and husband Ross of Odessa, his niece Shaylin D. Robinson and husband Mark of Cleburne, Texas, his nephew Marcus W. K. Arnold of Longview, his great-nephew Chandler B. Gold of Odessa, his great-nephew Chance Robinson and great-niece Natalie Robinson of Cleburne, great-niece Lily Arnold and great-nephew Tex Arnold of Gilmer, and his great-great-nephew Casher Arnold of Odessa. A memorial will be set at a later date. The family would like to thank as many friends that have reached out and expressed their love and memories with us. In lieu of flowers, the family requests a donation be made in his memory to St. Jude's Children's Hospital or your local Shriners organization. Arrangements are made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Richard George Schott Sr. Richard Dick George Schott was welcomed into the arms of his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on April 6th. Born on August 22, 1927 in Sioux City, Iowa, Dick was greeted into this world by his loving parents, Julia and John Schott. He is survived by his daughter and her husband, Sandy and Ed Jacobson of Pierre, South Dakota, his son, Richard Schott Jr. of Odessa, his son and his wife, Tom and Debbie Schott of Pinehurst, North Carolina, his daughter and her husband, Mary and Mark Goodman of Marysville, Ohio, his daughter and her husband, Connie and Mike Perrin of Midland, his daughter and her husband, Andrea and Scott Spradley of Odessa, many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that memorials be made to Hunter's Hope Ministry, care of Midland Bible Church, or you can visit huntershopeministry.com. A memorial service will be held Monday, April 10th at 2 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland to celebrate Dick's life. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Death notices from Saturday, April 8th. Cassandra Jean Johnson. Cassandra Jean Johnson, 59, passed away Monday, April 3rd. Viewing will be Monday, April 10th from noon to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Tuesday, April 11th at 11 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Chapel, private, family only. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website, www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. David Nelson Grimes. David Nelson Grimes, 94, of Midland, passed away Friday, April 7th. A visitation will be 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, April 13th, at the branch of NPW. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, April 14th at First Presbyterian Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Robert William Cone. Robert William Cone Jr., 68, of Ira Ann, Texas, passed away April 3rd at his home in Ira Ann, Texas. Arrangements have been entrusted to American Heritage Funeral Home. No services have been scheduled at this time. Sharon Janice Lyons. Sharon Janice Lyons, 86, of Odessa, died Friday, March 24th in Odessa, Texas. Celebration of Life will be held at 11 a.m. April 15th at Sunset Heights Baptist Church in Odessa. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Solomon Lee. Solomon Lee, 23, of Midland, passed away Monday, April 3rd in Midland. A visitation will be held 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, April 14th at the branch at NPW 3800 North Big Spring Street, Midland. Funeral services will take place 3 p.m. Saturday, April 15th at the Providence Presbyterian Church, 2900 Princeton Avenue. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Vincent Miyagi Diaz. Vincent Miyagi Diaz, 18, of Odessa, passed away Monday, April 3rd in Odessa. A viewing will be held Monday, April 10th from noon to 6 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. April 11th at American Heritage Funeral Home.
This Week at Your Texas Capitol by State Representative Brooks Landgraf. Things are as busy as they can get in the Texas Capitol these days. Like many, I'm proud Texas is one of the only states with a legislature that meets every other year. That is true limited government. But being the big state that we are, it does mean the legislature has a great deal of work to do for those 140 days every odd-numbered year. First and foremost, the legislature is constitutionally required to pass a balanced state budget every 2 years. The state budget takes the form of a bill, and this session that bill is House Bill 1, which is going to be up for a vote on the House floor on April 6th. After HB 1 passes out of the Texas House of Representatives, it will head over to the Texas Senate for their consideration. While the budget is extremely important, it is not the only important thing that happens during a legislative session. Legislation pertaining to a wide range of issues is being publicly discussed and debated in committees and on the House and Senate floors at all hours of the day and night. Our state is serious about transparency, and laws have been passed to ensure Texans from every corner of the state are able to take part in and witness the legislative process in person or from the comfort of their home. I'm always so appreciative of the messages I receive from constituents, and your input is especially valuable during the months that we are in session. I encourage everyone to share their thoughts on what the legislature is doing and what you think the legislature should be doing. No matter what form the communication takes, be it phone calls, emails, Facebook messages, or smoke signals, I'm always eager to hear directly from you. I especially love it when constituents make that long drive to the Capitol building for a visit. Nothing beats a face-to-face conversation, especially when it is a friendly face from West Texas. No matter how busy things get during the session, I always take time to visit with constituents who make the trip to the Capitol. I was thankful to have the opportunity to visit with several constituent groups this week, including student groups from ECISD and Wink Loving ISD. It's a special honor to have the opportunity to be a positive influence on our students and witness the hands-on learning that takes place when they come see the legislature in action. In addition to touring the Capitol and visiting my office, our student visitors were able to sit in on several committee hearings where I was proposing new legislation. Committee hearings are an important part of the legislative process, where members of the House and Senate first present their legislative ideas for consideration prior to debate by the full House or Senate. This was an especially busy week of committee hearings for me, as I had 9 of my own bills to lay out in various committees and 3 other hearings I had to attend as a member of the committee. I also had a committee hearing to run myself as the chairman of the House Environmental Regulation Committee, where I'm in a key position to defend the Texas industries from unnecessary and unpredictable regulations proposed by legislators who want Texas to have its own Green New Deal. So far this session, I've laid out a total of 16 bills, most of which are aimed at expanding or protecting individual liberty, improving public safety, defending Texas energy, or increasing government transparency. Most of the bills I laid out this week were in the House Criminal Jurisprudence Committee and the House Judiciary and Civil Jurisprudence Committee, where I presented legislation to increase the penalty for street racing, protect domestic violence victims, and increase access and improve the data available on the Texas Protective Order Registry created by Monica's Law in 2019. There's much more work to be done, and it is my honor to do it. Border security and property tax relief are among the top priorities for the 2023 Texas legislature, in addition to passing a balanced budget. I'm also personally hard at work doing everything I can to ensure the Permian Basin gets its fair share of all the blessings that come from energy production. Thankfully, Speaker Dade Phelan is also deeply committed to the communities that power the Texas oil and gas industry. He is from the downstream community of Beaumont and knows how connected our communities are despite being over 500 miles apart, and how especially important our constituents are to the state of Texas. I'll keep my nose to the grindstone and look forward to delivering results that the Permian Basin deserves. I also look forward to when I can get back to spending most of my time in West Texas, as opposed to inside the Texas Capitol. It is a beautiful and historic building, but I much prefer the wide open spaces and sunsets of West Texas. Thank you for the honor and privilege to serve as your voice in the Texas House of Representatives. God bless Texas.
Next steps after continuous low iron diagnoses. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, my mother is 82. About 2 years ago, she was diagnosed with low iron. All tests came back negative. She can't tolerate an iron infusion and is allergic to iron pills and or vitamins with iron. She eats foods that are high in iron, like liver, and drinks a little bit of red wine. Her score was 41 mcg/dL, which is a little bit higher than it was last year. She gets tired easily now, but my mother has always been a very energetic, active person. What else can be done? Answer. When iron levels are low, there are three big questions to ask. Is the patient getting enough iron? Are they able to absorb iron? And are they losing too much iron? Inadequate intake isn't a common problem, but is seen occasionally in clinical practice. Most of the foods that are high in iron are meat. Although there is iron in grape skins, some other compounds in red wine make the iron in wine unable to be absorbed, so don't ever think of wine as a good source of iron, or really as any kind of health food. I don't think your mother's problem is that she's not taking in enough iron-rich foods. When it comes to allergic reactions to iron pills, most reactions are not allergies to the iron, but to the fillers in the pill. Changing the type of iron pill usually solves that problem. There are also newer formulations of iron by injection, which are sometimes necessary and don't have near as much potential for a reaction as the old iron dextran injections. Being unable to absorb iron is also uncommon, but it's a lot more common than we used to think. Celiac disease is the most common of the conditions that prevent iron absorption. Autoimmune gastric atrophy, a bacterial infection like H. pylori, bariatric surgery, and medicines that reduce stomach acid like omeprazole are all reduce iron absorption.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Tuesday, April 11th. Marriage is strained by mother-in-law's gambling addiction. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been happily married for 28 years. We rarely have a problem we can't settle, but I'm stymied over this issue. His 72-year-old mother took up gambling several years back, and it has become an issue. Over the past year, she has been asking us for loans of $300 to $500 to cover her gambling losses. More than once, she has told us for weeks on end not to cash the check she gave us to repay us. We were late paying our insurance because she has yet to repay us. This is stressing me out. We have financial responsibilities of our own. We both work, but we are not wealthy. We have medical bills as well as car and house payments. We have children attending college. I tell my husband that we are not a loan institution for his family. I feel he is enabling his mother by lending her money. I think she needs to suffer the consequences of her behavior. I'm willing to pay a bill for her, but giving her an open-ended loan is not, in my opinion, the right thing to do. Why can't he tell her no? I don't want her to come between us. It has already affected my feelings toward her. I know she's an addict, but she doesn't seem to want to stop. I work too hard for my money to throw it away. What should we do? Signed, Not a Bank in Indiana. Dear Not a Bank, if you continue down the path your husband has put you both on, it will eventually damage your credit score and possibly your marriage. His mother may indeed be addicted to the rush she derives when she gambles. That is why, even when she runs out of money, she's unable to call it quits. For everyone's sake, it is imperative that you stop being her enablers. A support group for families of gambling addicts could be helpful for you and your spouse. If there isn't one nearby, find another 12-step group for family members of addicts and attend the meetings. They may help your husband understand the importance of no longer allowing his mother to make her problem yours. Dear Abby, I need help. For 10 years, I have worked in the deli department at a grocery store and tried my very best to get things done. My problem is my boss. She nitpicks and criticizes me to the point that I get so frustrated and angry I can't focus on work. Abby, I have Asperger's syndrome, so it's tough to socialize with customers I don't know. Half the time, when she starts in on me, I become so rattled I can't finish my task. She accuses me of wearing clothes that aren't clean enough, though I wash them every day. I don't want to do anything I'm going to regret later. Any advice you can give me will be appreciated. Signed, Losing It in Hawaii. Dear Losing It, because you feel you are being discriminated against by the person who heads your department, make an appointment to talk privately with the store manager to discuss what's going on. If, after that, you continue to be picked on, contact Legal Aid at Work. Call their helpline, 877-350-5441, and talk to someone there. I wish you luck.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.